Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, hello. Yes, this is Niler here. This week's episode is actually a reissue, is a replay from April 2022. And the reason it is a replay is because Andrea is away this week. And I thought, seeing as this week I had announced a Indie Sleaze night, the second Indie Sleaze night of this year after the last one did so well in April, I thought we would share that episode again that we had a chat with Louise McSharry from 2021, where we talk about Indie Sleaze as a concept and talk about the music and the fashion, because we're going to do an Indie Sleaze night and Louise is actually going to be the DJ with me in the Workman's Cellar on Friday, September 29th. I know it's a long way away, but look, all exciting, all announced. Tickets are actually selling already, so heads up on that. We'll be playing indie and rock, new rave, electro clash and bloghouse, the kind of stuff we talk about on this episode. The Strokes, Yeah Yeah Yeahs, TV on the Radio, LCD, Peaches, The Gossip, MIA, Vampire Weekend, all that kind of music of this era. So to get you in the mood for more indie sleaze, I thought I'd reshare this episode for this week. And yeah, enjoy. So you will now hear our episode about Indie Sleaze. Hello and welcome to the Niall or Nine podcast. It is myself, Niall, and Andrea Cleary here. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Niall.
It's an exciting week this week because we're going deep into the past, but not too far in the past. Basically, our past. We're going to explore the concept of indie sleaze. So, what is indie sleaze? It's something that you've been hearing about for the last 6 months, maybe, and something we decided we'd delve into because we are experts in the field, and that's because we have lived experience in what is now being called indie sleaze. Back then, it was something else. What is indie sleaze, Andrea?
Yeah, I mean, you might have read some pieces in Harper's Bazaar, in Dazed, in various different kind of publications about indie sleaze is making a comeback. What is it? It's unlike a lot of other trends. It's very easy to actually pinpoint when it is. You have some dates when you think it was, like, so maybe 2002 yeah. to
2004, 20. I think 2012 specifically yeah. are the kind of the glut of it in terms mm-hmm. of the time. So, but what is it? What is indie sleaze? What are we talking about here?
So we're talking about a resurgence of an aesthetic more than anything else. So the word indie is in it because I guess that's the musical component of what this subculture was. The subculture at the time was I don't know. We didn't call it in indie sleaze. We might have said hipsters, or we might have said indie, and that was a kind of aesthetic. Think Tumblr, think MySpace as well.
Definitely MySpace, yeah.
So in terms of the fashion, because I think it is more the fashion that's returning rather than this isn't as much like a musical trend that's coming back. But think kind of Urban Outfitters, ankle length leggings under dresses, skinny scarves, flash photography, very high contrast photographs. It was a kind of somewhere between trendy and a little bit trashy, a little bit grimy, and definitely predates the very clean and crisp kind of Instagram aesthetic that we have now.
I mean, my first impression of it was we were online. But we didn't have smartphones. I think that's kind of
We
went online, yeah. Mm. I was on more online than most probably at the time, because that's what I was doing. I was also working as a multimedia programmer, or like building websites and stuff like that. It's around the time that we're talking of like hipster runoff, which was 2007, 2013. An anonymous writer who went by the name of Carlos, who ran a blog called Hipster Runoff, in which he starkly wrote about the music of the era. As soon as something was in popular culture, Carlos was writing about it in a kind of derogatory fashion. And once you were named in Hipster Runoff, you were immediately cool around the world. That was kind of the vibe. And then in terms of
like a hip Perez Hilton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it like knowingly sarky and in a way that's like very derogatory and like, but also, you know, trying not to take it too seriously, but clearly taking it very seriously and knowing, being the first to know about things was very important at this time. And one of the things you would see at the time is the photo blogs, which I remember very well. Cobra Snake was one of the photographers around that time, about last night. Clubbing and party photo blogs with a very hedonistic agenda and very much like provocative flash photography with stylized watermarks of where it was or who was taking the photos. And that's how I really became, and it was mostly like big American cities like New York and LA where you were seeing these photos from. And in many cases, a lot of those people that were in the photos were, you know, minor celebrities or people like Chloe Sevigny or like, you know,
people in bands
or people who are exclusive. And it was kind of exclusive to the scene. And it was kind of the first time you would have seen a micro celebrity or an influencer in some way in their casual, you know, recreational way. Like, oh, I'm at a club and there's a picture of Karen O just like hanging out at a club. You know what I mean? Or posing for the camera. So, yeah, what was it? They weren't really posing, were they?
Yeah, so it's not really in the same way that you would see people at the club now. Like, if we think back to the 2000s, even in mainstream culture, there was so much focus on celebrities, even like Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie leaving clubs. The whole kind of point of paparazzis like hanging around was to catch a celebrity in a moment of like drunkenness or debauchery, or obviously like at the more severe end of that was, you know, the idea of like upskirting as well. But I think the aesthetic then of indie sleaze kind of leaned into this. Like, we were all each other's paparazzi. The idea was always to look like you weren't posing for the camera, or that the camera just like caught you in a moment while you were dancing or drinking or having fun with your friends. There wasn't really any posing. A photo of like three girls or whoever all standing next to each other posing, you just wouldn't see it, because it would be, I don't know, I remember feeling like a bit embarrassing, like you were having your Debs photo taken. And I suppose the idea was that the photos that you're uploading online, and younger listeners, we used to upload every single photo that we took on a night out. Like, you would put up an album of 50 photos of you and your friends at some club night, going through like the pre-drinks, the club night, the after party, and absolutely everything would go up online, no matter how grimy it was, no matter how gross it was, no matter how drunk you were, everything went up online. And that idea is so foreign to us now, because we've been living with incredibly curated Instagram feeds that are kind of all beige in a way, or all very, very curated. For the past like 10 years, 8 years, 7 years, you can't really tell the difference if somebody is taking a photo of someone's house, someone's workplace, or some kind of cultural space. Everything seems to be white or beige with a plant or a little neon sign. And we have kind of been living in this kind of aesthetic monoculture. So I think the idea of indices being something a bit more...
like incidental? Incidental. Less curated.
Less curated. That's exactly it. And I think you can see this with the rise in people putting up like photo dumps on Instagram, which would be like 10, I think you can put up to 10 photos in a post on Instagram. And they would be not connected with each other at all. It might be like, here's my month in photos. They tend not to be filtered either. There does seem to be a kind of a rejection of filtering photos that's kind of creeping into our modern use of social media, which I find really interesting. The idea of just completely rejecting it and showing a much more kind of maybe real, although it's debatable how real it was at the time either. You know, everything was performative then and it's going to be performative now. But it's a very interesting kind of idea that this will come back for Gen Z as it was the time when culture was changing towards being online. But like we said, going online, not living online. So there was a big sense of separation. And that's obviously going to affect what your night is like as well. Like, we remember nights when nobody was on the internet, which is funny, which is strange, you know, because now it's someone could take a photo of you and just immediately upload it. And that just wasn't a thing at the time. I like the whole like, no, show me the camera before you go home, or like, let me look through the photo. And then like deleting the photos of yourself that you don't want to end up on your Facebook the next day. It was a simple
and more
time.
Than that, I've actually watched since we reopened here in Ireland. I've sat in the bar, actually sat in the Button Factory, and I watched young, like 19, 20, 21 year olds all sit together, but on their phones. And that's something that was just so alien to me. And it's still kind of alien to me now, but to see that being accepted now so readily, where around that time, like, no one had a phone. If people were off on their own, they were probably, you know, annoyed with their friend or something, you know, sitting in a large group of people in a bar having drinks and everyone is on their phone. I noticed that, and it was really interesting to see that again.
Yeah.
It felt like, oh, this is like time has moved on.
Yeah. And so I guess it makes sense that Gen Z, or that some kind of portion of Gen Z, will have a curiosity about a time before constantly being on your phone, like a slightly more analog time where your phone wasn't your source of music. It wasn't your camera. It wasn't your entire life. You know, you went out, you had your iPod with your earphones for your music. You had your digital camera with a flash for your photographs, and you had your phone to make and receive calls and text messages. And that was it. You know, there wasn't this sense of being online all the time. And therefore there wasn't this sense of performativity all the time. Obviously, like I said, there was performativity in terms of how the photographs were being taken and composed. But I think what is attractive about the aesthetic of that time is that it is hedonistic. It is colorful, which is something we haven't seen in mainstream kind of aesthetics for a little while now. And it is very gritty in a way that I can understand wanting to be kind of disgusting around other people having just been through a pandemic. You know, it's the idea that everybody's really close, everybody's really sweaty, everybody's kind of disgusting with each other. And I'm like, yeah, I can kind of understand why, like, after coming out of 2 years of not being able to hang out with your friends, having to stand at like a respectful distance away, that yeah, you do want to get in there at a party and start getting grimy, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking back, and because I was looking back at some of the older posts, because, you know, Niall Nine, the website started in 2006-07, and when I look back on some of the things I've written about gigs, it very much feels like a diaristic approach of being like, I went out here last night, this is what I met, went to, this is who I met, and you link people on the internet who you met. So it was that kind of early online social media. I was definitely a part of that, and I've been looking back at it now, it's kind of, it's interesting because, you know, that's what people do with Instagram now with tags and stuff like that. But what we're doing at that time was like, you'd be like linking someone's blog. You know what I mean?
Here are the people to follow. Here's who's in, you know?
So yeah, that was a big part of it. So, you know, I did mention Hipster Runoff there earlier. And interestingly, Hipster Runoff was in the news. Did you see this, Andrea, recently?
No.
Oh my God. Did you not see this? So Grimes has outed herself in an interview very recently, like 2 or 3 weeks ago, as the person who was behind the hack of Hipster Runoff, the blog. So there you go.
Is there proof, or is this something that Grimes told
Vanity Fair that back in 2012, she blackmailed the founder of Hipster Runoff in order to force him to take down a photo of her kissing a friend at a party. And in doing, when he said, they said no, they ran a mean story. And so she performed, she got a friend, or said her and a friend performed a DDoS attack, which is a distributed denial of service. So that basically takes down the website, which floods it with a particular like load of traffic and renders it unusable, and then like knocks it off the server. We were actually going to DDoS Hipster Runoff and basically blackmail them. We were like, we're not going to let you put your site back up until you take your story down. And he did in fact take the story down, and it was my coolest hacker moment. So that's mad. So there you go.
I don't think we
ever really found out who Carlos is, actually. So yeah, that's interesting as well. But
we'll find out that she's behind Pop Bitch now next.
And I think so. The term indie sleaze, then we've traced it back to that TikTok.
Indie sleaze took off in the early 2000s. So, following the 20-year trend cycle, this isn't too far off. Some key characteristics from this trend were provocative advertisements, amateur style flash photography, opulent displays of clubbing, bonus points for watermarked photography.
A trend forecaster, which is something I only heard about last year. People who look out for trends and who make little TikTok videos about it. Oh, loser in Brooklyn. And did a little kind of compilation of what indie sleaze is and what it kind of became and what they were identifying as that. And that's one of the things, like wired headphones and phone cases, where it was back in that era, it was typewriters and Polaroids, because we were fetishizing the stuff of the past. Now we're fetishizing really cheap stuff that actually has no value at all whatsoever. Like Polaroids are still cool. If you have a Polaroid camera, it's still useful. Typewriters less so maybe, but like, you know, I can see the value in it, where, you know, wired headphones have been superseded by Bluetooth headsets and stuff like that. So
yeah, I remember at the time being at somebody's house and she had a typewriter, and I was like, oh my God, you're like the coolest girl in the world. Like yeah. there was a real fascination with the past and with like vintage stuff, right? So now it's not uncommon for a young person to say like, oh, I got my jumper or my jeans or whatever in a charity shop, because we're all trying to save the planet. But then it was part of this whole indie sleaze thing was like, oh yeah, this was my grandmother's, or this was, you know, I found this in this little thrift shop and stuff. And that wasn't a thing at all. Like that wasn't a thing before that. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't cool to wear secondhand clothes. I don't remember anyway, because I wore secondhand clothes ever since I was a child. And then it suddenly became quite cool to do so. And I was like, oh, thank God, because I'm very poor. And it's funny that Thrift Shop by Macklemore is kind of credited as like ending the indie sleaze era by, you know, repackaging that idea into that song. And then everyone agreed, like, yeah, this is over now. We need to move on.
So do you think the kind of twee idea is something that is in indie sleaze? Is that something that comes afterwards, the idea of like putting a bird on it, all that kind of stuff? That comes after indie sleaze, really, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Like Zooey,
so I think,
Deschanel vibes.
I think I seem to remember them kind of happening concurrently, or maybe the indie twee, as we call it now. Indie, yeah, like twee, Zooey, yeah. Deschanel wearing like a nice huge necklace of like an owl, or your little owl handbag or something. And so, sorry that all of this is about fashion, but like it is the fashion aesthetic that's coming back more so than the music. But
oh, don't worry, ukulele, we're gonna talk about playing the music.
Yeah. Playing a ukulele, right? That was like, that wasn't indie sleaze. That was indie twee, but they were kind of happening concurrently, I think. Yeah,
yeah, like you look at Zooey Deschanel thing. A band like Beirut, who, you know, that was this whole aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, Zac Condon, when he first started out, was 2006, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And also, we didn't really know anything then about, you know, well, it wasn't pop, it wasn't of the time to talk about cultural appropriation or anything like that. Wouldn't even have occurred to anyone, most people, at the time that Beirut,
oh, you mean people wearing their quote-unquote Afghan scarves and their Aztec dresses? Like, it was not a thing, no.
Yeah, where, you know, a guy from Brooklyn is making, you know, Balkan inspired music, you know what I mean? Like, those kind of things didn't really matter. But most of what indie sleaze was in terms of music is something that is still quite endured as well. Later on, we're going to be talking to Louise McSharry about her recollections of the era. And but I think in terms of talking about some of the bands, like the one that kind of cemented the term, the indie sleaze, is an Instagram account. There's an Instagram account called Indie Sleaze on Instagram. And it kind of documents pictures of the time. It was very much a New York party scene for a lot of things. But what I'm interested in as well, I think we all had our own different versions of it. So the UK vibe was like Skins, Foals, House Parties, Does It Offend You? Yeah. Bands like that, you know, there was very much like that kind of vibe. Be Your Own Pet, bands like that. And then while the American one had, yeah, there was, if you have read Meet Me in the Bathroom, which is a great book, a lot of the bands mentioned in that, obviously, your boys, the Strokes, are in there, LCD. In the UK again, we got Libertines, the likes of Patrick Wolf. Do you remember Patrick Wolf? And we take the massive artists at the time in Canada, likes of Metric, in New York, Yeah Yeahs, Santi Gold before she was Santo Gold. And then there was a whole other aesthetic that MIA. Was a part of that. MIA, yeah, Sky Ferreira, the Dum Dum Girls,
the Ting Tings.
Yeah, I don't know if they really count. They were kind of just a pop band.
I think
fashion-wise,
the Ting Tings were a big part.
CSS would be the big one, the Brazilian band. Who were actually produced by Dan Carey, actually, I think. Who's gone on to produce?
I specifically remember a time in my life when I went to a CSS gig with wearing leggings and a slogan T-shirt. I've no idea what the T-shirt said, but that might be my big indie amnesty moment. That and losing my trilby at a Baby Shambles gig, but I was a bit younger at that.
We are talking 2006 when I went to see CSS in the Village, and I also like. Around that time, 2006, 2007, I was going to Crawdaddy. I was going to Gigs and Whelans. I was really like, I was going to see Bondé de Rôle, and stuff like that. Just like bands that are just kind of bad, but also some that have endured, like TV on the Radio, for example, are a good example. And then there's the more like dance arena stuff, which is like a Uffy, and she was very much a what would you call her? Like, it was kind of, she's a French like singer. She was more personality than a singer, really. And she's still around. She actually had a song out last week, I think, which is kind of mad. But yeah, Pop the Glock was the song that she had.
Yeah, you talk shit, think I care. My style in this flow is confusing because you don't know. Pop the Glock, the 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 pop the Glock.
Bands like Death From Above, 1979. Particularly the remix stuff. So it was like the French Touch remix stuff. That was, for me, that was very, this is all kind of crosses over with the Blog House sound and also Electro Clash and a lot of that kind of stuff. But that
remix stuff is coming back on TikTok now as well.
Yeah. So the Crookers Kid Cudi remix, I've heard a lot.
Yeah.
Which is kind of mad. To hear that come back again. And then there's, of course, you've got New Rave as well, which is like Crystal Castles, the Klaxons. I really think of the Klaxon Soul Wax remix of Gravity's Rainbow as well, as this kind of vibe. Think, and then Justice and Simeon, We Are Your Friends, the song that Kanye bum rushed the MTV Awards for. And we've got more we're going to talk about with Louise McSherry in a bit as well.
Mentioned a lot of bands there, and a lot of bands and artists have women in terms of like who's endured, and a few of them have like people of color and women of color. At the time, it was a very like the indie scene was a very kind of white man with a guitar thing. But what I find so interesting about Indie Sleaze now, the resurgence 2.0, is that, you know, if you go on to that that Instagram page, like Karen O is the profile picture, and it tends to be the women that are the photographs of the women that have endured out of the era. And I think obviously this is part of it being, you know, a fashion resurgence as opposed to it being a musical resurgence. But I do love the idea that like this account and younger Gen Zers who are discovering the Indices era are seeking out the women of the era and maybe finding some bands or finding some artists who didn't get, you know, their dues at the time because of their, you know, their gender or their race or whatever it was, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, you're right about that. The Instagram certainly is heavily weighted in that way. I guess the other thing in terms of music that I was thinking about was that, you know, and something that you see echoed in, and is maybe one of the reasons why this kind of stuff is taking off on TikTok so easily, is because mashups were a big part of the ecosystem back in around this time we're talking about, 2005, 2006, especially with the likes of Girl Talk, who he smashed so many songs together in the course of 4 minutes that you can't even count.
I used to listen to so much of that.
I went to see Girl Talk a load of times in Dublin. He played in Whelan's once, I remember. And I just...
He used to be constantly getting sued as well because he wouldn't clear any of the music that he was using. And he was constantly getting sued. Yeah. His mashups were so cool. But I mean, yeah. Now they're...
But like,
there
was a Foggy Notions Christmas party in 2007, which Girl Talk played, where everyone got up on the stage and you can see pictures on 909.com of all that. Like, it's just something you didn't really see. We didn't have that kind of... American frat party kind of vibe at all. And that was something that this was brought, you know, like you get crowd surfing, and then that led on to stuff like Dan Deacon for Baltimore doing kind of crowd interaction stuff, and then it evolved from there, you know. And then but yeah, there was so much of that happening at the time. It was so interesting that like mashups were a big thing as well in the UK in particular, like the likes of like Kylie and Blue Monday mashup, you know, those kind of things, mm-hmm. like going into the charts and all that kind of stuff. So funny enough, yeah. Girl Talk's album somehow is on Spotify. Don't ask me how. I don't know how. Wow. It's just like, if you throw enough samples at something, they will possibly stick.
I remember really liking Girl Talk. Yeah, for sure. I think as well, like the influence of disco was very, very important. I would consider Lady Gaga's first song, Just Dance, like a very, very important kind of relic of the indie sleaze era. I rewatched the video today, the music video today, and it's astounding how much of this aesthetic, our current understanding of this aesthetic, I think comes from that style. And obviously she was a new artist, a pop artist, so the decisions were made there to kind of, you know, lean into what was slightly like popular but a bit edgier at the time, which was, you know, the kind of the indie scene. But it was like disco balls in a grubby house party, and that's exactly what I think the indie sleaze aesthetic is. It's like that nexus of glamour and cheap plastic, you know?
Yeah. I don't think that we had in Ireland a very much our own take on it, but what we did have, like in terms of bands, it was a lot of indie stuff, but it wasn't very like danceable. There wasn't a lot of that. Like there was so I remember seeing Crystal Castles in 2007 and Cap as Cap were on support, and the gig was put on by Maximum Joy, a great name at the time. So Skinny Wolves and all that kind of stuff. May 20, 2007, it was when that happened. You know what I mean? So I remember being at that gig and just seeing people I've never seen before, seeing hipsters for the first time, and also being one of the shortest like gigs I've ever seen, because they were only, we're talking about Crystal Castles when they only started out, and obviously things went on to be much more problematic for them, but and in terms of the members as well. But at that time, it was such a buzz to see a band like that. You really didn't know what was happening. It was all MySpace related, all that kind of stuff. So the buzz of that, I was out going to see loads of stuff like that. But the thing that, in terms of a lot of people might associate with the indie sleaze era in terms of clubs, is Antics. So Antics was a club that happened in Crawdaddy every Wednesday night. I actually have a bit here from an article I wrote in 2008. About Antics, just to colour this a bit. For those who here's my piece. I went to see a band. I went to see El Guincho, actually, who went on to produce Rosalia. And so this was a Wednesday night. So I had already been to the Electric Picnic launch, and then I went to see Adrian Crowley, and then I went for my third gig of the evening. I went to see El Guincho in Crawdaddy. He was on 1 o'clock on a Wednesday night. This is what I wrote about Antics at the time. For those who are unaware, Antics on a Wednesday night in Crawdaddy is a student indie night who frequently put on decent live acts. It's cheap admission, €5. Cheap booze, £3 all night. All pints, scummy blue alcohol, etc. I'm presuming I'm talking about.
Do you want to explain what a pound is to any of our younger listeners?
Did I say pound? I should have said euros. Okay. Unfortunately, a night at Antics is akin to running a gauntlet of well-dressed stumbling and eventually falling. Fae, 19-year-olds, inebriated young males dressed like extras in skins, propping themselves up and feigning dance moves to ward off sleep. They laugh and shout at each other across the room, dance, snog, snog and dance, and fall all over again. I don't know what's wrong with me here. I'm like, I do go on to say in this piece that I'm like, I'm just a bit older. I'm like 25. So like,
oh my God, you were so over it at that stage.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I can't stand the awkwardness. I'm just like, I'm so happy. Even in this piece, I'm like, I'm happy that I'm shed the awkwardness, the like uncontrollable drunkenness and the elements of adolescence you'd rather forget. So I was seeing that even at that time, feeling my age at the age of 25, which is kind of mad.
But then you go on and turn 30 and act like that after a pint and a half. So
yeah. And then the other thing that there was another thing that actually I think Una Mullally and her pals all put on called Soundcheck, which was on Spy. I think it was a Wednesday. It was Thursday night. So it was on at 7 p.m. And I remember DJing there for one of my first times ever DJed. So yeah, kind of. That whole thing was, I think Antics ran until 2010 and when it stopped, and then, but Soundcheck in Spy was on every Thursday, and it was kind of, I'd say it gave a lot of people their first chance to DJ as well. Certainly for me, it was the first time to DJ at Brunswick Road. You get an hour. Indie electro and fun kind of tunes was the vibe of it. And yeah, everyone got to play some tunes. You'd be hearing the gossip and that kind of stuff, you know, just like all of the time. And then all of the Bloghouse stuff, especially, and electro clash stuff like Peaches and Tiga and things like that stuff, which, you know, surprisingly has endured a lot more than you may think.
Something that I'm wondering, that I have a suspicion about this kind of resurgence, is whether it actually is a resurgence. So, I mean, how much of what is being talked about indie sleaze is people our age reminiscing, and how much of it is Gen Z actually engaging with on a kind of an aesthetic level? And, you know, like I'm not sure if I see this being as big of a thing as we're anticipating it.
No, I don't. I think it's a route for nostalgia, isn't it? It's a nostalgia trough that we're currently enjoying, I think. And that's what, for anyone, you know, I'd say it's probably greatly exaggerated in terms of the number of people who are taking this aesthetic into the world. But for anyone like us who were around at the time, like experiencing those kind of things, you're like, oh yeah. I mean, it is that kind of thing, isn't it? It's like, it is an easy thing. Like anything nostalgic is, oh, remember the member berries in South Park, you know, that idea that, you know, the easiest thing you can do is just think nostalgically about the past. And you know,
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Doesn't feel that long ago. And yet, talking about it now, at the time, you couldn't see the clear aesthetic of what it was. And now you can kind of see the aesthetic more. And that is an interesting thing itself, I think, just being able to.
Because what I find interesting is if you go on like on Instagram, for example, the hashtag indie sleaze, it's all kind of old photos. There doesn't seem to be a consensus on what the current indie sleaze aesthetic is. and what's involved and what isn't involved. Like, what are we bringing back? Is it the brightly colored tights? Is it the like side fringes? Are they going to come back? You know, it does seem to be a lot more of like posting images from the past as opposed to our current interpretation of that style. And maybe it's just because it's a new thing and we're only just starting to talk about it. But I don't yet get the sense that we have a grasp on what it will look like if it does end up kind of coming back in the mainstream at all, because it won't come back as a subculture. That's the thing. Like, subcultures don't really happen twice. It gets co-opted by the mainstream and then it will always be that. And then in 15 to 20 years time, it'll be kind of reinvigorated by fashion companies or bloggers or whoever. Or even bloggers isn't really a current thing anymore, is it? But
you know, it's the kind of thing that would be part of a mood board for like someone who's an artist or a stylist or something like that, you know?
Exactly. It'd be something that it would be a decision made by members of a group rather than an actual subculture, because that's not going to happen twice. You don't tend to look to the past to actually kind of create something new in the same, like do it twice in the same way, you know? So, yeah, I think it's interesting.
Do you have any relics of that era in your house, in your apartment at the moment?
That's a good question. Oh, I do. I have a Lomography camera in the other room. So Lomography cameras were, do you remember them? Do you know what they are?
Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
So they're these like kind of like cheaply made but expensive to buy film cameras that would kind of purposefully like mess up the film so that you get like light bleed or different colors bleeding into the image. And the aesthetic was very like vintage. It was maybe a little bit more like cutesy indie than indie sleaze. But I bought it when I was in college, when I did like a year of a multimedia degree and dropped out. But I did that year during kind of the highs, during like the fever pitch of indie sleaze. So you can imagine I was hanging out with a lot of indie sleazers, and yeah, bought this camera. And the photos were nice, but it's very much a relic of that time. I haven't used it since probably 2011.
But isn't it interesting that that kind of ephemera that was of that time then begot, you know, essentially the Instagram filters that we started with Instagram, when like people might not remember that, but like anyone who wasn't around at the time, certainly the people who were.
I remember Instagram only being available on iPhone first.
Yeah. And then it being, you know, every filter was like vintage, and even the old logo was all very vintage. Like Instagram was this kind of aesthetic of the retro. And you know, it's obviously evolved because it has to, but that was when it started. It was like the little, what is the little logo for Instagram? It's a little portable Polaroid camera kind of thing. So that's what we did. That's where this came from. That's where Instagram came from, indie sleaze. You know,
it did. Like, it 100% did. Yeah. I remember first getting it and being like, oh wow, I can put all these cool, because like the indie sleaze kind of photography was like, you know, the flash, and like that was our filter, you know, like you could filter things in three ways: by turning the contrast up, you would never turn it down because that didn't look good, so turning the contrast up, putting it into sepia, or putting it into black and white. And those were the three filters that we had before Instagram. And now it would be so weird for, you know, an 18-year-old now to think about taking a photo and not just the option, but like the expectation that you would filter it in some way, or that you would face tune it, or just put like a little very like subtle filter on it. And maybe that's maybe there's a rejection of that in the resurgence of indie sleaze, because this was a time when we weren't filtering. We just weren't. We were turning up the contrast as high as it would go, and that was it. And that's what all our photos look like. And flash cameras make your skin look really, really clear. So I say bring that back, actually, because I was a early 20s person with acne, and you wouldn't have known it from any of my sleazy photos. So it was a good time for me.
Yeah, and I think if you wanted to read something of that era, I think we've mentioned it, but Meet Me in the Bathroom by Lizzie Goodman is possibly an oral history style book is probably the most definitive in terms of this era, although it's mostly about the kind of larger bands and things that happened in New York City itself. Strokes, Interpol, Vampire Weekend, all that kind of stuff. Though, you know, it could herald itself a little bit more of an indie sleaze revival with when the documentary does come out, maybe. And I think, are they planning on making it into a drama series? I thought they were. Maybe it's just a documentary. Anyway, the documentary apparently was shown at Sundance earlier this year, so hopefully it'll come out at some point, and there's reviews of it actually online, so interesting to see that. I would be interested in that.
Do you know something else that really scares me about this resurgence? We might see the rise in skinny jeans happen a second time, because since we've been alive, skinny jeans came during indie sleaze and then they went away, and now they might come back a second time. And I'm like, oh god, I'm gonna be in the second cycle of jeans, like my mom with mom jeans. Like, terrifying. Sorry, that thought just occurred to me there.
yeah. Well, hopefully not. Let's talk to Louise McSharry about her recollections of the time. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around here, Louise, where do we start? You were telling me last time I saw you that you are interested in hosting an event that maybe, you know, celebrates the indie sleaze era, right? When did this happen to you? When did you start to think about this?
Well, I've been watching. I mean, first of all, I'm sure you guys have talked about it, but indie sleaze as a term is just hilarious to me, because obviously. Mm-hmm. When we were living through the indie sleaze era, nobody was calling it indie sleaze, or certainly not that I'm aware of.
No.
So when people started kind of talking about it, I was like, what? I was like, no, that was just life, guys.
That's we just all being thought we were cool. Super glamorous at the time.
Weren't
there
we?
There was nothing sleazy.
So I started to kind of read all this writing about this time in music and in culture, and it just made me really nostalgic, because I think the time, like the best times of my entire life were during those times, you know, the most crack and the most kind of wild fun. I remember during this time actually turning to friends and being like, we're having the time of our lives. This is the time of our lives. But then, do you remember there was that that kind of emo festival was announced with like loads of throwback, like new metal and emo bands? I can't even remember what it was called. Is that what it was? I don't know.
Yeah,
but
the one that was in, where was it? It was in Punchestown or something, wasn't it?
No, this is like an American one. And everybody was going crazy about the lineup, because they were like, oh my God, it's every band we ever liked. And around that time, Ed Banger posted this spoof poster of a festival that isn't happening. But when my husband and I saw it, we were like, oh my God, like I would pay 100 million euro to go to that festival. And it was We Are Your Friends Fest. And the headliners were Justice and Soulwax, LCD Sound System, Simian Mobile Disco, Mastercraft, The Bloody Beetroots, Crookers, Metronomy, Hot Ship, Chromeo, Phoenix. Like I could go on. And I was just like, oh, like had a physical response to this poster.
Yeah.
And I was walking around, like, I feel like everyone I met who's my age, I was like, look at this. I was like, can you imagine? So then I started thinking, do you know what? It would be so fun to just have a night where we got to do that and like relive those moments. And I was like, we could call it We Used to Be Fun, because I feel like it's a fair representation of where a lot of people my age are. You know, maybe you have kids or you've just slowed down a little bit. Maybe you have kids and you're trying not to slow down, but you just want to go back to those glorious days of your youth.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned Ed Banger, because we didn't specifically talk about them, but they were a big part of this whole aesthetic as well, in terms of,
yeah,
musically anyway. Certainly we kind of touched on Bloghouse as an idea and like what even that was, but like, you know, obviously it was house music or dance music that came of that, that was basically shared online, but Ed Banger were kind of the main proponents of all of it, weren't they? And they had,
yeah,
they were still like, they had Uffy and all that kind of stuff, DJ Medi. Like, yeah, all of it was very, it's, yeah.
Uffy like seems like queen of indie sleaze as we look back. Although I actually wasn't that into Uffy at the time. But I think, like, you know, for a lot of us, it's such a specific time in terms of what we wore and where we went. And, you know, I was living in Galway at the time. I was living in Dublin for some of it and then in Galway. And, you know, there was such a specific look, and yeah, like even, you know, seeing some of the shoes has sent me back in a major way. Like, I don't know how any of us are still alive. We were walking around nightclubs in ballet flats.
Oh my God.
Like how many of us must have gotten glass in our feet?
Yeah.
And
soaking wet tights in ballet boots.
Yeah. Like saturated.
Waiting for a taxi. Like no boots. Not a boot to be
feel
seen.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. No. But yeah, like, and there are so many specific kind of artists that remind me of that time, and that always will. And for me, it's like a time of freedom. And it didn't matter that we were in Galway and we weren't in like Shoreditch or New York or LA. Like, we still had our scene. We had our own scene. And, you know, it was amazing.
I'm seeing this We Are Your Friends Fest here, the poster. Yeah, it's got everything. But what is interesting is going down a bit further and having a look at some of the acts you maybe forgot about. Like, mm-mm, I mean, even we're getting down to the end here and we still have the gossip and it's still pretty high up. Miami Horror, Van Shee, yeah, Fake Blood, A-Track, of course, Dim, Does It Offend You? Yeah, who you mentioned actually a bit earlier on. Switch, Paramore, Jack Beat, Boy 8-Bit, I remember him playing Oxygen, Hervé, God, all that stuff, yeah.
That's, yeah,
weird. LA Riots.
LA God. Riots, I just, yeah, spotted that one too.
Cindy.
I see Airplane there, and do you remember Airplane did the remix of Paris?
Yeah.
And I went to see Airplane in, I think it was Forbidden Fruit, like, you know, after this time. And I was just like so excited about seeing Airplane because I just wanted to hear that song really loud in a tent. Mm. And he kind of like teased it through his whole set and then started to play it. And then the sound went off and the lights came up. And he was like on the stage, like kind of like effing and blinding. And he'd obviously just ignored his time limit and gone over. And the whole crowd was just like, so
we're all
bad
here for this one song.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically like, I don't know. There's a sexual like analogy you could make there, because we were all ready to go. And then we were shut down. It was not good.
Other than wanting to, you know, bring it all back together for one night only. What were some of your favorite songs of that time, other than the Airplane remix of Paris?
Well, there's so many, and I've been putting together a playlist for this imaginary club night that I have in my head on Spotify. And it's been amazing because obviously I have songs that I remember, and then Spotify, because of the algorithm, will kind of feed you. So there's some that I had completely forgotten that came back. But like the ones that, I mean, one which no doubt is a song of this time is MIA, Paper Planes.
Yeah.
And it's still, you still hear it a lot. So, you know, in a way, I think it's lost a bit of its nostalgic magic, but it was so that time. And MIA was such an icon of that time, you know, her kind of bolshiness and rebellious nature, you know, her politics, her jewelry, her look, like all of it was so cool. She was very London, being London was very cool at the time. So yeah, Paper Planes for me is completely iconic. And then there's songs that are like so specific to that time, like CSS, Let's Make Love and Listen to Death from Above.
Huge.
And New Young Pony Club, Ice Cream.
I can give you what you want.
Like, those two songs for me are just, like, I can't imagine them outside of that specific moment.
Yeah. I went back and listened to, well, the CSS one, I still have a soft spot for that song. The New Young Pony.
Oh, I love it.
I haven't heard it in a long, long time. But it certainly, it does, like, take me back to a very specific era. Because I don't think I've heard it since then properly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's very specific. Are they still around, New Young Pony Club? Are they? I don't think they are they?
I have no idea. I feel like these things are better left unknown. Like, they live as they did for me during this specific time. But yeah, like, I, you know, New Young Pony Club and CSS, those two songs take me back specifically to, there was a club night in Galway at the time called Gigantic. And when I first moved to Galway, it was on in a place called De Burgos, which still exists. But it was just like a downstairs kind of cavern. And it was, oh my God, it was perfect. Smoking area out the back. You know, one little bar. It wasn't big. You didn't need to be. The energy that the guys from Gigantic brought was just whopper. And we used to just have the best time there. And then they had to move venue. And, you know, obviously everybody was devastated. It was like full protest scenes. But I have, but those songs just take me back to that little kind of underground, literally underground club. And I remember, actually, I didn't mention this song when I was talking to you, Niall, but I remember hearing Florence and the Machine for the first time there. Mm. We were dancing and a song ended and I was like, oh, I'm going to go sit down. And Mac, one of the DJs, leaned across the decks to grab me and he went, no, you need to hear this song. Stay there. And I was like, okay. And I felt like deeply special. And he was playing Dog Days Are Over by Florence and the Machine, which at the time, you know, now I think people have a bit of a kind of snobbery about Florence, or she's not so cool anymore. Mm. I think she's still cool. But at the time, that song was so cool and she was brand new and it was really fresh. And obviously I've danced to that song 100 million times since. But yeah, those songs just bring me back to that moment. Mm. And then another one, which I think is very specific to the time and to the sound, is Black Kids, I'm Not Gonna Teach Your Boyfriend How to Dance.
Yeah. God, this was such a big, like a blog song as well.
I loved it. I loved it. And I think that, you know, there was something about these songs that felt not secret, but just like you were kind of either in the club and you knew the songs or you weren't in the club. And it wasn't, you know, geography specific, as I said, like we felt like we were in it in Galway because obviously we had the internet. The internet wasn't that old. Like, you could access music in a new way and share music in a new way and share a scene internationally in a new way at this time. But like, you know, there would be people who wouldn't have ever heard that song or known that song or cared about that song. But, you know, it was one of my favorites and I felt kind of special because I knew it, you know?
Yeah.
It's what's so funny about these songs, like the, I think that song in particular, like if that song came out now, it would be a pop song. So like the quote unquote in indie sleaze that we were listening to at the time, it was pop music for people who didn't want to listen to pop music. It still had that buoyancy. It still had that sense of like, okay, I'm going out to have fun with my friends. Yeah. I'm not, it wasn't the same as other subcultures, like maybe like kind of the folky stuff that started coming out around that time, stuff you couldn't dance to. But this was like, no, we're going out, we're partying, and we deserve to party just as much as everybody else. So we're
going to do it more than everybody else. And this whole indie sleaze thing was about going out.
Like, yeah, the entire aesthetic of it was people being drunk, their makeup was smudged, their hair was messy. I think the idea was to not be able to tell if you were going to a party or coming home from a party. It was somewhere in between. Like something has happened. You've been dragged through a bush somewhere.
And there were so, I mean, I'm just remembering a dress that I wore like regularly out was a Star Trek costume dress that I'd bought in Ann Summers and on a trip to London. Like, you know, there were no real rules. It was all about fun and it was all about looking like, you could have just come from, yeah, a night in a hotel with a rock star and
yeah,
like, you know,
and
you
a
felt
very
like maybe
heavy
that
sense
could happen
of irony
that night
as well.
Yeah.
Huge sense of irony, like, oh, I'm wearing this, like, I'm wearing like a Phil Collins t-shirt for a laugh. Or do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the kind of, yeah, very ironic.
Well, it was very, like, everybody was very consciously cool, weren't they?
Yes.
Like, you know, we kind of took ourselves a little bit seriously probably at that time.
Yeah, definitely. I know I definitely did.
And then one other song that I mentioned was MGMT, Time to Pretend. I, like, again, this is a song that still gets played, but I remember when I first heard this song, I'd come back to Dublin. Like, obviously, I was back and forth from Galway and Dublin a good bit, and I was going to see my friend, and I was walking down Dame Street. I can still remember so specifically listening to it full blast in my headphones and, like, just being like, this is amazing. Like, I love this song. Listening to it over and over and over again, walking up by the Olympia and being like, everybody needs to know this song. And arriving at my friend's house and being like, you have to listen to this song. Like, I just loved it so much.
Yeah, so overwhelming. But what else can we do? Get jobs and offices and wake up for the morning commute. Get about our mothers and our friends. We're fated to pretend.
And then again, it just soundtracked so many moments. It's kind of an epic sound, that song as well. It feels kind of important or something, just even tonally.
I remember that the song that shook me out of only listening to music that had guitars and got me into starting to listen to music that had synthesizers. And I was like, oh,
wow.
Okay.
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, it was like, because I was just listening to men playing guitars for like all of my teenage years.
And
then the kind of the disco indie kind of era came in, and I think it was really pushed in by that song and the sound of that band. Kids as well by MGMT was a huge one for me. Electric Feel, and I remember just being like, I deserve to party, I deserve to
you
dance
too.
Actually. And here's a soundtrack for me to be able to do that.
100%.
I remember interviewing them when they came over and played Whelans, I think, for State Magazine at the time. I like doing. They just seem so shook by their sudden success. They were like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, they were like, we're big in Ireland. What's happening? They did look like they were dragged through a bush, in fairness. They looked like they had no sleep as well, which they probably didn't. So
it was the way of life.
Yeah, that was it. So, Louise, do you have anything in your house at the moment that would signify your time spent with the indie sleaze movement, or, you know, the indie times? Like, I have a load of very poor 7-inches that I bought like in Rough Trade and places like that, that are from bands that I just would never listen to ever again, but because they were adjacent to that time, I bought them. And I'm like, I moved house recently and I'm looking at them, I was kind of going, whoa, never listen to them ever again. You know, they're not even good. One of the ones is Bondi to Roll. Do you remember them? The Brazilian band. So I have a 7-inch blown to them. I'm like, this is not good.
I have a Dirty Pretty Things t-shirt upstairs,
which
I bought when they came to the Roisin Duff, and like Carl Barat came off stage and came upstairs to the smoking area and just walked around kissing girls. Like, it was insane. It was so inappropriate. And I remember I bought the t-shirt. I was so like, it was a really good gig. Like, the vibe was intense and good. And I remember feeling like putting the t-shirt on like that night and feeling extremely cool. It was a cool t-shirt. It was like black and white stripes with a little logo. And that definitely for me is kind of an icon of that time. I have some shoes and stuff that I just can't get rid of that just remind me of it. I still have that Star Trek dress. It's all fashion for me. Like, I think I didn't buy a lot of physical music at that time. It was all
digital. We had our iPods. We didn't need.
Exactly.
We had our iPod Nanos.
Yeah. I definitely have a MAC Lady Danger lipstick still going from that time. I have repurchased, but I remember discovering it at that time. I wish I could remember. I started wearing it because I read an interview with some really fucking cool musician woman who was part of a duo, and I can't remember who the duo were, but she was like, yeah, this is my lipstick. And I had bleached blonde hair at the time, and she had bleached blonde hair, and she wore this like bright orange red lipstick, and she looked really cool. I was like, yeah, I want to be like her. So it's all those kind of little things for me.
Yeah,
I cut a fringe at that time and have largely been without one, or not been without one since. Like, I still believe in my heart that I'm a little indie gal, and this little indie gal has a fringe. Just,
I love it
in life. I think, yeah. And I remember cutting my hair short because I wanted to be like Karen O.
Oh, I had Robin. I had a Robin haircut. My hair was bleach blonde, half shaved, and like a kind of slight bowl cut. It was very cool. Like, will I ever be that cool again? Probably not.
No, none of us ever will. Niall, what do you remember? Because earlier you and I talked a bit about the fashion, and I think I was mostly talking about women. What do you remember of like what was cool for men to wear at the time?
Kind of low-slung
jeans. I definitely remember there being like, you know, those, like an androgyny, like where boys could wear their girlfriend's clothes, girls could wear their boyfriend's clothes, and it was a kind
of. Remember the Carhartt
thing.
Belts that like you just pull across? Those ones. Yeah. They were big.
I feel like cassettes played a big role. Cassette belt buckles and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. other than that, I mean, it's just band t-shirts, really, wasn't it?
And
And then, like we were talking about, you know, the aesthetic, the early hipster aesthetic was kind of for some people. I was saying I went to the first Crystal Castles gig in Dublin in 2007, and I remember seeing hipsters for the first time, and I was like, oh my God, who are these people? And I don't think I ever really saw them again. And then you'd go to somewhere like Andrews Lane Theatre, and, you know, we had our versions, we had antics, we had, you know, other clubs that happened in Andrews Lane as well. We had Soundcheck as well, which Una Malali was involved in, and I mean, I was saying that was one of the first places I ever DJed, you know what I mean? So like, we had those kind of touch points where you're like going to these CDs type of bands, like it happened in Crawdaddy probably on a Wednesday or Thursday night, and you were going to see a band. I remember like trying to stay awake because I've been out all night trying, like when the band was about to come on, you know, the kind of way it was like I've been in that situation, so I wouldn't be doing it now, but look, it's still great. You can go and there's some great music from the era and it's still there. But what is interesting to me is feeling nostalgic for a time of music that I've previously written about, and then being able to find words that I've written about at that time is very unusual for me. So.
What I find really interesting about it is feeling nostalgic for music that I've kind of never really stopped listening to. And so I don't know if the sense of nostalgia, like definitely with some of the bands that that I've kind of rediscovered on some of these playlists, I'm like, whoa, I remember that song. I literally haven't listened to that in like 10 or 15 years or whatever. But a lot of the sound, I can chart its influence on things that I listen to later very, very easily. So it was such an influential time. Part of me feels like I never really left it. But then another part of me is like, oh my God, I'm old enough that this is now returning.
You never really leave it behind.
Yeah.
So it's always with you.
But it's kind of funny, isn't it, that I think what's interesting about this is that it doesn't feel like you know what, like Y2K is back in fashion with Gen Z and stuff. But this, the indie sleaze resurgence almost feels like it's more about nostalgia than about... Yeah. Like a younger generation adopting a trend. Like it
absolutely,
seems like it's mostly just like people like us being like, wasn't that great?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? We were young.
I think that's what it is.
I think there are far more millennials engaging with indie sleaze than there are Gen Zers, 100%.
It was only 15 years ago.
It's not really long enough ago that, like, maybe in 5 years' time, we'll see, you know, neon sunglasses and like really brightly colored like hoodies and, you know, dolly shoes making their way back into fashion.
New
but
rave.
It hasn't happened yet. New rave.
Newer rave. I love it.
What do you want to leave in that era? Could be music, could be the aesthetic wise. For me, it was the obsession with mustaches. Not like actual mustaches on people's faces, but you remember everything had a mustache on it, like jewelry and mugs, and people would get it tattooed on their fingers and stuff. I'm like, no, don't bring that back.
Yeah, I wasn't so into that. I think there was a lot of kind of womanizing at that time as well by male musicians. So I'd probably leave that there. And from every era of music.
Let's leave like
maybe Carl Barat shouldn't have just been walking around the smoking area, like randomly grabbing girls and kissing them. And that kind of vibe I could definitely say goodbye to forever. But to be honest, I just feel like a glowing warmth for all of it. Even the stuff that I hated, even the mustaches. I know exactly what you mean. And I didn't like it at the time, but now I'm like, oh god, we were so cute.
It was a simpler time for sure. What about you, Niall? What do you want to leave behind?
Jeans that were dragging on the floor, that's the main thing. But but that was just that the general style at the time.
I thought
I don't think it was this specific was skinny to this, jeans. Really. It was more skinny, but there was a lot of people who were wearing that at this time, and I still get a bit sick in my mouth when I think about it.
Yeah, I remember a lot of the guys I was friends with were wearing women's jeans because the men's jeans weren't tight enough. That was...
I remember that.
That was the vibe.
I remember knowing a really cool couple who would just wear each other's clothes and like on nights out or whatever, or like swap during the night, and just thinking like, oh, you guys are so cool.
I just can't even imagine having that body type.
I know. Yeah. Both of them were the exact same body type, just straight up and down. And I was like,
gas. That's cool.
Listen, Louise, thanks so much for dropping in and talking to us about Indie Sleaze. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about Indie Sleaze. I would do it every day of the week for the rest of my life. Thanks a million.
So big thanks to Louise for participating in our discussion about Indie Sleaze. Of course, Louise McSharry has her own brand new podcast called Catch Up with Louise McSharry, which is released every Friday. So you can catch that up herself. And that is all about what's happening in the news, what's happening, what you need to know. So Louise McSharry does Catch Up with Louise McSharry. And as for us, our plugs are patreon.com/909 as ever. We mentioned iPods earlier on. One of the column from the Discord, which you can get access to through Patreon, is customizing old iPads and iPod Nanos.
Yeah, he's fixing them and then just making them look beautiful. They're absolutely gorgeous. I love whenever he posts them in the Discord. They're just so beautiful. And I actually have an iPod here that I'm going to get in touch with him about to fix up for me, because I was supposed to do Analog 2021 and then I didn't do it. But I still, I want to get back into that analog life. I miss having an iPod, man. I miss having like 10,000 songs and not being able to listen to anything but them. Because it was enough. It was enough for me then. And by God, it'll be enough for me now.
Yeah. Little postscript for you there. There is a little Instagram from Indie Sleaze. Do you know who that is?
It's loading.
So I just sent Andrea a picture from Indie Sleaze. It is a picture of Alexa Demi, who is from Euphoria.
Oh, look at her. Oh my God. Is this from now? Or is this from the past?
That's an Urban Outfitters photo shoot. So there you go.
Oh my God.
That was the look at the time. Yeah,
this was exactly the look that I wanted during this time in life. And never achieved. I looked terrible going around the place, but we all sort of did.
If you want more from Indie Sleaze, there's many playlists online as well. You can just search for Indie Sleaze. And, you know, I think everyone, your Indie Sleaze is my Indie Sleaze, is our Indie Sleaze. So, that is Indie Sleaze, and that is this from us this week. It is an interesting thing. Nostalgia is an easy fruit to pick from. It's the lowest hanging fruit in a way, but it's also a lot of fun.
I'm generally quite resistant to nostalgia, but maybe as I get a bit older, I'm like, yeah, they were good times.
Well, that is the Indie Sleaze. We'd love to hear what your Indie Sleaze anthems or recollections of that time were. It's podcast@909.com. Or if you're a member of the Patreon or Discord, you can jump in there. And there's a channel there called Podcast Discussion where we generally have a few bits of chat after each episode. So that is it from us, yes, from Indie Sleaze. I'm going to go off to Urban Outfitters and ask them where their stock is from 2009 and see.
Could I have a pair of gold disco pants, please? Because I couldn't afford them then. And I have more disposable income now. So I'm fine with them coming back. I will buy them. But yeah, I'm going to go listen to MGMT and cry. Thanks, okay, everyone, for listening.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Can you remember a time when the city was a great place for architects and dilettantes, a nice place for midwives and crossing guards, and on and on? Do you remember a time when this pool was a great place for water winds and cannonballs, a nice place for astrologists and blow-up dolls, and on?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
A great place for architects and dilettantes. A nice place for midwives and crossing guards, and on and on. Do you remember a time when it's